I want to invite up Nate Rubright. He's such a great preacher. We're so glad to have him here. And he's going to be preaching this morning from the book of Matthew. So welcome him up.
Hey. Thank you. Thank you, Katie. And thank you, Harbor, for having me here. It's great to be back. It's absolutely wonderful to be back. And thank you so much for braving the storms. Everybody who is joining online who didn't brave the storms, you made the right decision and you stayed safe. That's really good. We were all the crazy ones who were just like, that's going to be fine. There's like a huge puddle in that dip in the road over here. That's probably a huge problem right now. So anyway, thank you for having me. And thank you for letting me share some of the things that God has been doing in my life. So my family just moved. We moved from Somerville all the way to Medford, 2 miles away from where we live right now. And despite the fact that that was like a small move, it feels huge. We've been in our current place, for 5 years. We've accumulated so much stuff. We also accumulated 2 daughters in that place too, which they have a bunch of stuff. And so my life has just been boxes. It's been boxes stacked up everywhere. And I'm actually convinced that the folks that helped us move added boxes to the ones that we already had. And so we've just been, every day we've kind of, at first we were just overwhelmed. And my wife and I were just kind of like, we can't do all of this. This is never going to happen. So we've just sort of resolved to be like, all right, one day, one box. We're just going to get at least one box done. So there's been a lot of really fun time of just sort of staying up late after the kids go to sleep, opening up some boxes, finding out what you have. You know, there's a lot of stuff that it's just like, oh my gosh, what even is this? And part of that journey has been we get to just kind of play some music and listen to some things. And I've had a really big nostalgia streak, so I've gone back to start listening to some of the old albums that I grew up with. I grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, so I put on Blink 182's unfortunately named Enema of the State. If you know that album, you're laughing. If you don't, just hang with me for a minute here. This is the album that has All the Small Things and What's My Name Again on it. Huge hits, just platinum hits. But what I had forgotten is that there's actually one more single on that album, and that's the one I'm going to be talking about today. So a little bit deep in the album, I think it's track number 7, a song comes on. It's called Adam's Song. And I remember listening to it as a teenager in the suburbs of Pittsburgh. And I heard it probably for the first time in 2 decades last week. It's a song played, and it's a song that's unlike anything that Blink 182 has ever made. If you're familiar with the band, they're kind of, you know, these punk rock kids from California being super immature, talking about growing up, talking about girls and school and cars, that kind of thing. But this song was actually extremely deep for who they were and sort of who they were as a band. The song's called Adam's Song. And it actually has the subject matter of depression and suicide. And the song opens up with the lead singer saying, I had just actually tried to commit suicide, and now I'm sort of contemplating whether or not that's something I want to do again. And it's really strange. This is a pop song. This is a song that had massive airplay. This was a song that was extremely well played. But it's a song that doesn't necessarily have the legs that the other songs did. I'll share the chorus with you right now. I'll put it on the screen. This is the chorus. I never conquered, rarely came. 16 just held such better days. Days when I still felt alive. We couldn't wait to go outside. The world was wide, too late to try. The tour was over, we'd survived. I couldn't wait till I got home to pass the time in my room alone. And the break in that song happens, I mean, right in that chorus, it's verse number 5. The world was wide, comma, too late to try. And if that doesn't encapsulate what it's like to be a kid, I have no idea what does. Being a teenager is about having that transition point between the world being this sandbox of a place. Everything is awesome, and you can be sort of whoever you want to be. There's no rules. There's very few consequences. And then all of a sudden, you start realizing too late to try. Maybe the past looks a little bit better than the future. The world was wide. Now it's too late to try. That's a difficult lyric. But the reason why I stopped unpacking boxes, I stopped everything. I listened to the rest of the song. I paused it. I just sat down. I started crying late at night earlier this week. Because I remembered what I felt when I first heard that song. I remembered what it was like to be a kid. It's over almost 25 years ago. I remember what it was like to hear that song and to say, that is true. That is a struggle that I had. And it's weird, because on the surface, I got nothing to do with what Blink-182 was doing. If you look at those guys, my pants could never look like that. I didn't dream about having tattoos and piercings. I was a pretty lame kid. And not even lame in sort of like the cool, nerdy way, just lame in the, like, my clothes never fit. And I was trying to figure myself out, and I didn't really know who I was. I never owned a pair of Vans, that's for sure. And I remember, dude, I put gel in my hair one time, and it looked so stupid that I was absolutely embarrassed by it. And as much as I listened to 90s alternative radio, I also listened to NPR just as much, just because I thought it was really fun and interesting. But those guys miles away in California, said something that was true about my life. They said something that was so true, I had to stop what I was doing decades later and just sit there and let it wash over me. And it brought tears to my eyes. Folks that I, have just absolutely almost no other connection to. And so turning off those lyrics and or turning off that music and just listening and kind of mulling over the lyrics, it really brought me to a pretty interesting place. And we'll circle back on this song, but I think I've been thinking a lot about what the message of Christianity is. So a little bit of context. I just graduated from divinity school. It was great, 3-year process. I got to learn a lot about the Bible. I got to read some really, really incredible stuff, think about really important things, some philosophers. I did, you know, comparative religions, learned a lot about other religions, specifically Buddhism. And it's cool. It's cool to be done. It's cool to have people kind of come up and be like, oh, you have a master in divinity, a master's in divinity. And I said, yes, I'm a divine master. I know the things that everyone else is asking questions about. And I say that ironically because I don't really know where I stand. I gave myself the goal this summer to say, all right, what is the gospel for me? What is good news? Without regurgitating any interesting thing that I've ever learned or read, without just pointing to some verse in the Bible, what is the central message of Christianity for me? What am I doing? When I talk to students about their lives, when we create these communities here, like Harbor of Hope, what is actually going on? Gospel means, you know, evangelion. It means good news. But what is that good news for me? A lot of people have come up to me and said, hey, you know, you must know a lot about the Bible. You must know this versus this, or you must know what's right versus what's wrong. And that's a really interesting place to be because, yes, I learned some languages. I can translate the Bible out of, especially the New Testament, out of Greek, and understand the decisions that go into certain verses and what they say. But a lot of it comes up lacking. If all of this knowledge just basically lets me just enter a debate, I don't really see what the point is. I don't really see what the central good news of Christianity is. If it's just about me being right, if it's about me being able to rule on sin, and yes, that is bad, that is good, there's got to be something else. I don't really see Jesus' ministry looking that way. And so I've told myself this summer, figure it out. I've been doing this for 7 years. I probably should have figured it out earlier, but figure out what the thing is that you're trying to do. What's the compelling thing? What's the message for the folks in your life that cuts through everything? What is that? When I look at the church nowadays, I'm saying just not this church, but capital C church, I see a lot of debate. It seems like having the right answer is what we're all sort of centered on. That unity comes from this unity of mind about everything. And whenever something big happens, like a pandemic, whatever the Supreme Court does, what's happening with young people, the climate, political directions of our leaders, it seems like what we do is we just wade into these conversations, debates about where we stand. Where do I stand? If I'm a Christian, where do I stand? What is my point? What point of view do I have to take in this debate? And that then unity comes from, oh, we're all going to get on the same page. We're all going to have the answer. We're all going to get this right. We're going to dig down deep. We're going to ask people who have masters in divinity. We're going to ask them, and they're going to tell us. And don't get me wrong, the big stuff is big for a reason. What we are trying to do, translating the Bible, operate churches, be a society, be a country, those are really important things. Those are things that we need to take seriously, things that we don't want to mess around with. But it's strange because I don't think I'm living this life to just be right about everything. I didn't go to school just to know all the answers, to be able to share all the answers with the people that I know, and just sort of accumulate a community around just these, oh yeah, it's this versus this. And where does this debate get us? And this is where this is going to be pretty personal for me. This debate brings us to a place of division, inevitably. Anybody sitting here, I know, especially because after the pandemic, we all had to ask ourselves, why do I go to church? Why do I go to church? What if the pastor says something I don't agree with? What if the church does something I don't like? What's the point? I already became, you know, a Christian a long time ago. I got baptized in middle school. I'll just stay home. I'll read the Bible. I'll do whatever, you know, it takes to feel good about my own faith. But why put my lot in with the rest of everybody else? And you're looking at somebody right now who has let debate, certainly church structure debate, divide him from the church. That has gotten into these arguments about, no, we should be doing this, and if we don't, I'm going to leave. Absolutely. I just don't think that's the good news Jesus talked about. I just don't think that there's something where at the end of the day, all we are doing is heaping our Christian perspective onto the pile of every other sort of voice in our world. There's got to be something else. And so amongst, you know, all these debates and this thing that I've been sort of been struggling with, where, you know, I've learned a lot of really important things and a lot of really good things, but I just don't see, I don't know, I just don't see a way out from all this tension. I was talking to my friend Ethan. I suggest all of you have a friend, Ethan, who's very wise, who can tell you things. And I was talking to him. I said, hey, there's a lot of tension in what I believe to be good and right, these big debates and the answers to those debates that I think are really important. But I also see a lot of division from those debates. And I see that tension is pulling a lot of people apart. And that tension, more so than not, is just leading to isolation. It's leading to division, but it's just leading to a lot of people just saying, I don't really want to do this community thing anymore. My friend Ethan said, he goes, yeah, I just think in some cases it just, we need to be reminded that we are poor in spirit, looking for righteousness. We're just people that are poor in spirit looking for righteousness. And I said, that's interesting, Ethan. That's interesting. And I didn't know at the time. I mean, it sounds like a really, you know, Bible thing to say, and it's because it is. It's a quote from Matthew chapter 5, the so-called Sermon on the Mount, which we'll put up here in a minute. This is Jesus' call to action in ministry. The Sermon on the Mount goes on for several more chapters. It's a really interesting sort of place to start if you're sort of looking to see what Jesus is about. But he starts his ministry. He starts sort of announcing himself as a minister in this way. It starts with a poem. And this is a poem in anaphoric form, which means that each piece of the poem begins with the same word. And I'll read it for you now. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And finally, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. These are sometimes called the Beatitudes, which is a weird name, the Beatitudes. But this is Jesus setting it up. It's not a debate. He's not calling anybody out. What Jesus is preaching here, I believe, is the good news. See, the reason I was crying in my basement earlier this week after listening to a song that I hadn't heard in 25 years, it's not because depression is sad or suicide is sad. I was crying because I felt those things. Whenever you hear somebody talk about those things so well, it cuts deep into your soul, no matter where they're from. So what I hear in the Sermon on the Mount is these ways in which somebody is saying something that is true that brings me hope. The reason I was crying in the basement is not, again, because things are sad in this disembodied way. I was crying because things were sad for me. These people were talking about something that I experienced as a kid, and that's something that I go back to and think about is still a profound, pivotal memory in my life. See, I was somebody who was poor in spirit, looking for something different. And so the thing is that when you hear something so profoundly true about your own life from somebody else, it brings hope. The cool thing about Adam's song is that it ends on this hopeful note. The final chorus doesn't sort of repeat, sort of the past is better. It ends, you know, more optimistically. It ends in a way it says, you know, tomorrow holds such better days. Days when I can't wait to get outside, see my friends. And that's wonderful. Because we can put this Matthew chapter 5 slide back up. We can read through those and just rephrase them. Blessed are those who are struggling right now. Because what they're going through gives them the ability to see how things really should be. Blessed are those who are on the receiving end of life's bad breaks because they understand how it should be. Blessed are those who want for more even if it doesn't seem possible. Blessed are those because they're just a little bit closer to actually understanding what a world made perfect by God could be. Blessed are those kids in California struggling with depression and suicide because when I hear their story, and I'm struggling with depression and suicide, I see truth about God. And that truth is that there is hope because I'm connected to other people. And so what does this mean for the church? For me, this realization that connection over struggle is far more important, far bigger of a component than just these debates about what is true or what we're sort of grappling with. That we forget that it's so important to share the burden of each other's thoughts. To sit there and ask, why is this debate so big for me? This church, I know this church, I know Katie, I know the staff, are committed to making Harbor of Hope that place, that kingdom of God where truly blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who are struggling, because this is the place where you can find connection in that struggle. Blessed are you because that struggle that you are feeling, whatever it may be, though it might be unique to you, it is not a deal breaker to feeling connection in this community. And so where do we want to go from here? I just want to share two guideposts as to what, you know, this means for me and thinking about what ministry means outside of just navigating sort of these big theological or political questions. The first thing is ask why things are important to me. This is a very different question than asking just why is this important. See, with this question, I want to figure out why things are important to me specifically. What about my background, my experience, the things that I've done in my life that makes this particular issue, whatever it may be, important to me? I don't stay up at night thinking about, oh my gosh, is the grass still green in the morning? No, but I certainly stay up late thinking about all the things I mentioned before because I read everything nearly constantly. I'm like a news junkie. I read magazines front to back. I listen to podcasts, still listen to NPR like crazy. And if you want to know my answer or my responses or my opinions about some of those stuff, I'll gladly give them to you. I've got no problem sharing my thoughts. But what I've realized is that a far more interesting question is, why do I care about this? Why is this thing jumping off the page to me? Because Jesus did that. Jesus was worried constantly about the individual. He didn't sit back and cross his arms and say, well, you know, being healthy is really important, and if you're sick, boy, that sucks. No. He looked at people in the eyes. He helped them. He rubbed dirt into people's faces. He was out there in the crowds getting yelled at. He was about that individual struggle. He was about understanding what individual struggle was for people. And he knew that at the heart of all of these big debates that we have, there's someone who's just hurting. There's someone who's hurting, who's been on the receiving end of a bad break, who just doesn't know how to put it all together. Jesus cared about that individual. And so we need to take seriously ourselves and the driving motivations for our thoughts. When my coworker says something, why is it that I jump on? Wow. It's because the stakes are high for me in my experience. And I acknowledge that understanding who you are and why things are important to you can take you to some dark places. Contemplating stuff like depression is really, really difficult. It's really uncomfortable. You don't want to do that. It's nice to stay in these places where things are disembodied, to talk about racism in a way that just keeps it at arm's length, as opposed to saying, here's my experience with that. Here's what I think about that. Here's what I did growing up, things that I'm ashamed of. Here's where I am now. But the good news is, it's the second thing. Let connection over struggle be good news. When you go to those difficult places, know that there is somebody else also going to those difficult places, feeling that struggle and connecting with you over it. That's the good news. That's the gospel. It's that when you get to that, unfortunately, dark place sometimes behind a lot of our problems, there's actually going to be somebody there to say, hey, me too. I understand. And that's why church is church. It's people. It's not this individual faith where you sit there and try to figure everything out about the Bible, debate with yourself, read interesting things online. For everything that I've learned and read and know, it doesn't get me any closer to understanding what Jesus' ministry was unless I'm in a community like this one. Jesus never intended the Bible to be the thing that carries ministry, carries the message of Christianity. He intended the church to be the place that carries and maintains what Christianity is. And the way that we get past all of the things that divide us, the important things, again, I don't want to diminish that we are facing some important things in our time. But we have to acknowledge the specific component of connection over the fact that we are all struggling. That is the good news. And so moving forward, I don't want to just, reference interesting things that somebody else said when it comes to the gospel. And someone says, hey, why are you a pastor? Why is this important to you? I want to say, I'm dealing with a lot of difficult things, just like I know you guys are dealing with a lot of difficult things. I want to connect over that because Jesus instructs us that hope happens when we do that. And that can get past any boundary. Just like some kids in California wrote a song that to this day brings tears to my eyes because it was true. In the same way, we can connect with each other over all the things that we're struggling with. Let's pray. God, let our connection with each other be the thing that we yearn for. Not just being unified on every single thing that goes on in the world, each new debate of the day, but let truly connect over the fact that we are people seeking righteousness. We are people that see this world. We know it is not heaven. We are reminded every day that it is not heaven. But let that observation not divide us, not bring us to a cynical place, but bring us somewhere that fundamentally connects us with each other. Understand that as things rage out in the world, we can come here, we can be vulnerable about the ways that life has shaped us, and that we can find hope here, we can find hope in this place. And that's what I pray for this church, for Harbor of Hope. Pray for anybody who is seeking that connection. There are people here that fundamentally do not want to debate you, do not want to convince you of things. They just want to connect over those places that we've all been, those difficult places that we've all been. In your name I pray, amen.